Good evening, and welcome to From the Frontline. Today's topic, countering the subversion of language. Now, it's quite apparent that in today's world, there's been a lot of new speak and rephrasing of terminology and taking words that may sound honest or not rude, but the meaning behind it is quite a lot worse than that. A big one in South Africa particularly is load shedding, which in reality is pretty much just power failures.
Yeah? Yes. But, you know, George Orwell, the author of 1984, said that politics is the art of using language or abusing language to make theft and murder sound respectable. So I think seldom before in history can language have been so subverted. In education and entertainment and news media, and particularly in politics, it's so as to promote more confusion and disinformation and actually communication. So when you say we have load shedding tonight, it sounds like they've got so much power that they've got to put a bit of it off or give you some extra free or something, because there's so much power you've got to load. How does load shedding communicate a blackout, power failure? But governments don't want to admit that they failed. They failed in every level. They failed to employ the right people because they're using black economic empowerment, broad-based black economic empowerment, BBB, EE, affirmative action, sense of entitlement, appointing people to a position who don't want the work or the responsibility, but they want the perks and the privileges, and they give themselves performance bonuses of millions of rands while they let our power failure stations become a complete mess. Do you know that right now, South Africa has got a population more than doubled than it had in 1994. And do you know that we are paying 10 times more for our electricity than we were in 1994? And Eskom's employing 3 times more people than we were in 1994 and are producing less electricity than we were in 1994. So despite the population having doubled and the cost of electricity having increased 1,000%, and despite them having 3 times more employees, the electricity isn't sufficient to keep up with the needs of the population. Well, of course not. We've doubled our population. You would have thought the economy might have grown. Well, actually, it hasn't that much. So, in fact, what this government has done is to cover their failure, even though they've chased away millions of job creators and employers and investors and tourists. And, of course, the lockdown hasn't helped. But even before that, it was a mess. They still can't provide enough electricity, even with closing down all these factories and providing so much unemployment. Every year that the ANC's been in power, we've added 1 million more unemployed to the ranks of the unemployed. So back in 1994, when Nelson Mandela, the first ANC president, became leader of this country, we had about 2 point something million unemployed. Today we have 30 million unemployed, which is half the population. Now, they've used a few figures to make it look less than that. They're trying to say it's about 26 or 27% unemployed. But they've got 3 categories now. They've got unemployed, discouraged work seekers, and economically inactive, which is, and the difference is, a discouraged work seeker and unemployed is the same thing, for goodness sake. So, again, abuse of language, a discouraged work seeker. How's that? So what they've done is, in order to cover the fact of total failure of government, overcharging you for electricity, which is now not only more expensive, but less reliable. And so instead of saying failure, we have failed. We're employing the wrong people. We're lazy. We're incompetent. We're corrupt. We're stealing. We're looting. Instead of that, it says, today we have phase 4 load shedding. It almost sounds like you've won something. It sounds positive. So why do we even use the word, oh, tonight we've got load shedding between 6 and 8. We should refuse to take the newspeak doublethink 1984 terminology of the government to make their theft sound respect. We should call it a power failure, because that's what it is. It's a power failure, a scheduled power failure, a blackout. But load shedding, no, I don't think I'm comfortable using their terminology.
And then moving on to a different topic, The current situation in America with the so-called peaceful protests. Now, particularly in the liberal media, you're having a lot of documentation and reports on clearly violent attacks being called protests. But when you have a Trump rally, or if you have someone opening up their gym, these are activists, and these are people who are breaking quarantine laws and such.
Social distancing.
Yeah. Why would they be calling it such a thing?
Well, it's so important, again, as George Orwell said, language must make theft and murder sound respectable. And so governments will put themselves in the positive and put their opponents in negative. So you look at something like this. I protest, but you riot. I am firm, but you're stubborn. I am reasonable, but you're cowardly and craven and so on. So they sort of have irregular verbs. What works for them doesn't work for others. So here's Webster's dictionary definition of terrorism. Webster's Dictionary of the English Language, 1828, terrorism is the use of violence and threats of violence to intimidate or coerce for political purposes. I'll read that again. Terrorism is the use of violence and threats to intimidate or coerce for political purposes. Does that not fit everything that BLM and Antifa are doing on the streets? Intimidating, coercing, burning, looting, damaging, blocking traffic, attacking people, throwing Molotov cocktails, firebombs, and all the destruction which has resulted in billions of dollars of damage, destroying some people's lives, destroying people's shops, homes, factories, burning, looting, destroying. Just think of the inconvenience this must cause for not just hundreds, but thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, all this damage. And yet they're calling it protest or peaceful protest or mostly peaceful protest. Now, how's that for an abuse of language? Because there's nothing peaceful about a Molotov cocktail. There's nothing peaceful about looting a shop. And what does stealing Nike shoes and flat-top TVs have to do with a protest? And no, it's got everything to do with terrorism. And they don't want to admit that what they're doing is terrorism, so they're calling them protesters. And the police were ordered to stand back and do nothing. And I suppose if they admitted Antifa and BLM are dangerous Marxist revolutionary terrorist groups, then the police and National Guard would be compelled to act and the Attorney General would be compelled to prosecute. And it would put the whole discussion in a different frame of reference. On the other hand, when you've got people assembling for a Trump rally, they suddenly speak about these being a threat because they're wearing a red Make America Great Again hat, or because there's a lot of them coming to the rally, a lot more than go to the Democrats' rallies, for example. And so they say, it could be a danger for spreading this virus, which hasn't come close to the kind of dangers of the Spanish flu or the bubonic plague or anything like that. It's more like the seasonal flu. And yet to be able to intimidate people from what they don't want them to do, they use terminology that's negative to them, but to justify their BLM Antifa riots, which they hope will derail the Trump re-election campaign at the end of this year. And bear in mind, in an election year, everything's about the election, and we are less than 2 months away from the American presidential elections 2020. And as many people have pointed out, whatever goes on in America during an election year is about the election.
And then what about hate speech? Which you could look at as rational free speech, or just people voicing their own opinion, which again is all about what the original liberal movement was. But in today's case, it's hate speech if it is not in line with whatever their rhetoric is.
Yes, so isn't it interesting that your free speech is now called hate speech, which reminds one of George Orwell's 1984 when he spoke about a time would come when you would have thought crimes and thought police to prosecute your thought crimes. Now, that sounds ridiculous, because how can you be prosecuted for thinking? But that's what's happening today, because have you noticed that the restriction on your free speech is actually a restriction on your thoughts? Because you're not allowed to say what you see. You can see that's violent, that's dangerous, that's malicious, that's discriminatory, that's racist, that's evil, that's... and you can give your description, but no, you're not allowed to say that. Hate speech, bigot, narrow-minded, homophobic, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic, racist, Nazi, bigot, whatever they want to throw at you. But wait a minute, isn't that hate speech? They are presuming to know your motives and are throwing labels at you. Isn't it interesting that the people engage in real hate speech, where they're literally singing things like kill the Boer, kill the farmer, or that have you heard the things being said about what they want to do with Trump and his supporters and punish them after the election if the Democrats get in? And there's a lot of hate speech, but if you point out their hate speech, next thing you're guilty of hate speech for just quoting what these people are doing, what they've said, like kill the Boer, kill the farmer. That's not hate speech. But what's hate speech is you pointing out common sense things or quoting from the Bible or saying something as rational, as logical, as biologically obvious as, well, marriage can only be between a man and a woman, or biologically there's only two genders. But now that gets shouted down as hate speech. But people who screaming and shouting and attacking people, going into restaurants and forcing people to raise your fist, say Black Lives Matter, say it, and they're chanting and they're in their face and they're threatening them, or attacking Rand Paul and his wife while they're just trying to walk down the street in Washington, D.C. It's incredible what gets accepted as, no, but that's just freedom of expression, while intimidating and threatening people and attacking people. But if you just want to rationally point out the obvious, like there's only two genders, that suddenly gets shot down as hate speech.
And then what about this innocuous term of collateral damage? Oh. Which could, I mean, you could pretty much just put it as mass murder in many cases.
Well, for example, when the 20th century began, it was estimated that in the average war, 96% of the people being killed were civilians. That all changed at the beginning of the 20th century. Sorry, 96% of people being killed in the average war were military. Armed combatants, where only about 4% were civilians. Whereas it's now turned around to more the opposite by the end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century, where civilians are the main targets of war and terrorism now. So it's all changed in the Anglo-Boer War when the war started to target the civilians, burn down farms, poison wells, put the women and children in concentration camps, which caused devastation in this country, for example. And the Second World War, it reached the highest point of so-called 1,000 bomber raids coming over cities in Europe, dropping hundreds of tons, in fact thousands of tons, of high explosive on inner cities, incinerating tens of thousands, in the case of Dresden, literally hundreds of thousands of people incinerated in what they called strategic bombing campaigns, or they called it collateral damage. Now, again, when you get a bomber, and Obama was the king of drone assassinations, where they would use these drones shooting Hellfire missiles, and these are unmanned aerial delivery vehicles in order to either spy on or to deliver weapons attacks. He authorized well over 14,000 drone attacks, and a lot of the people, in fact, by some calculations, most of the people killed in these drone assassination attacks were civilians, not the targeted terrorist or whoever they were targeting, but civilians, unarmed people, which they called collateral damage. So, interesting, you get a peace prize for killing tens of thousands of civilians, but that's the way things have got these days. A peace prize to someone who does more drone assassinations and kills more civilians, unintended side victims as collateral damage, than even the ones being targeted. And that's just called collateral damage. So that's a very callous term by politicians to, as George Orwell said, politicians abuse language to make murder sound respectable. It was just collateral damage.
And then on that topic of politicians and what I'm about to say, for those who are listening, you will either understand it immediately or it'll take you a while to catch on, but gangster states, criminal corruption, looting of the economy, and pretty much the raping of most countries of their finances and such, is labeled as, wait for it, government.
That's true. So it was Professor R.J. Rummel of University of Hawaii who's published the book Death by Government, who said that most political science classes today are completely out of touch with reality. He said, and he's a political scientist. He's a professor of political science in universities, and he's published a book on how the reality of government in the 20th century has been gangster states, where they are looting, burning, murdering, imprisoning, torturing, wiping out not just the livelihoods, but the lives of not just tens of thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands, in some cases like Red China, Cambodia and the Soviet Union, millions of lives of their own people. And he said, but the political science faculties in the West don't seem to reflect this reality. They still speak about governments as being there for the protection, the service of the people, and the preservation of culture. And they've got all kinds of nice theories, but it's not reality. As he said, political science, as taught in our universities, is completely divorced from the reality of what governments are actually doing in the world. And let's bear in mind that the United Nations, so-called, I'm talking about that bunch of gangsters in New York who have all their flags there, they're just a bunch of unelected dictators. The vast majority of those people aren't really representatives of elected governments with any kind of moral legitimacy or any kind of electoral mandate from their population. Most of them are there because of a violent coup d'etat, because of revolution, because of terrorist tactics, because of secret police, because of bludgeoning, if not mowing down their population when they rise up to protest, or driving over them with their tanks, like in Tiananmen Square, Red Square, where the Red Chinese government literally wiped out over 10,000 students who were protesting in Tiananmen Square just because they were protesting, killed them. Now, we're not talking about hitting them over the head or tear gassing them or water cannoning them. They literally drove over them with tanks and shot and murdered over 10,000 students in Tiananmen Square on one day. That's Red China. And yet you've got people complaining about something that might be done in America or in South Africa by a policeman on some occasion divorced from the context, and yet completely ignore the fact that Red China can just wipe out over 10,000 students for a protest where they were asking for liberty and democracy. And what's going on in Hong Kong right now is a major crime. So yes, what we've got today in the United Nations is the largest collection of unelected dictators, human traffickers, drug dealers, criminals, murderers in the world. But then They're just gangsters with flags.
But then straight, how did they get there? This must be a question that we must ask, you know, when you look at it from the other side of the spectrum of, we look at all of these problems, but how did these problems start? And why weren't they stopped in their tracks when they started? And how did this get so deep into society that it is just a standard rhetoric that government is against you and everything is about centralized governments? And when you have corporations and groups and so-called nonprofit organizations like the UN and the European Union, etc., they are considered as good,
yes,
but they're not. How did they get that power?
Well, this is much of the history of the 20th century. And there are some historians who've helped us understand it. A.J.P. Taylor, Pat Buchanan have written some excellent books and helped us to understand some of what's happened. But in the 20th century, starting with the First World War, in some ways you could go back to the Anglo-Boer War in 1899 to 1902, when you got bankers starting to organize the wars. Like the Rothschilds wanted the diamonds and gold in South Africa and engineered a war to basically genocide the Boers, as has been well documented, in order to be able to get rid of the obstacle in their way of controlling what they called the richest piece of real estate on earth, which was the Witwatersrand, where most of the gold in the world at that stage was located. And so you've had in the 20th century the rise of what Stephen Mitford Goodson documented in his A History of Central Banking and Enslavement of Mankind, where the banks, the central banks, which charge interest. Now just think, for example, that in the Bible, and if you've got a red letter edition where the words of Christ are in red letters, you can read Jesus speaking about the parable of the talents and saying to the man, why didn't you put the talent in the bank so that it could have earned me interest? Now notice that in the Bible, Jesus says, you put your money in the bank to earn interest. But today, the banks will charge you just to deposit cash and they'll charge you interest. They've got your money, they're speculating, buying and doing all sorts of things with your money that they've got there, but you must charge interest, whereas the Bible says the bank should charge you interest. Sorry, the bank should give you, pay you out interest so that you earn interest for banking instead of losing money on what they call bank charges. The Bible forbids usury, which is the charging of interest by banks. And Magna Carta, the first statute, the first written limitation on the powers of government, expressly forbids usury multiple times. At any rate, when Europe forbade usury, they had so much extra time that if you go into the 13th and 14th centuries, after they had expelled the usury banksters, they had so much extra time. The average person in Europe was working, average peasant was working about 140 days of the year and had 220 holidays a year, because they weren't paying interest, and therefore their taxes were so low, their taxes were in the region of 1% to 2%. I'm not the economist, I'm quoting from Stephen Mitford Goodson, the economist who was once director of the Southern Reserve Bank, and he wrote in The History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind that when Europe was protected from usury, when the banks weren't allowed to charge interest, they were able to build the cathedrals. There was so much extra time and wealth around, and people had the opportunity to have this explosion of creativity and produce these greatest architectural masterpieces in history. But in the 20th century, we've gotten to the stage where the banksters have now taken such control that they've organized ruinous wars to bring about greater and greater centralization, seen in the European Union, the African Union, the United Nations, and the rise of gangster states that, in fact, if you compare the world in 1900, 1914 even, with how it's become now in 2020, we have lost a lot of freedom, and we have lost a vast amount of autonomy, and there's been a tremendous rise of centralization, globalization, New World Order is another term for it, which the Bible warns you about. In Revelation 13, the Bible warns about Antichrist, the beast, satanic figure, who will seek to control a one-world government with a one-world economy, with a one-world religion. And that, in a word, is globalism. And so why have we got to this stage, and how is it possible that we've been lied to so much? Well, the people who control the banks are the same ones who control the news media, the entertainment industry.
And you, basically.
The education institutions in many cases.
Well, then on that, how can we counter the persuasive newspeak, the double think, and the propaganda, which is eroding freedom of speech? Not even freedom of speech, freedom of certain actions and rights and abilities to live and practice your religion or practice your own daily activities without needing, no, you need a license to do this, you need a license to go in here, you need a mask to go in there, you need to be certified to do this, you need to be vaccinated before you travel here.
You need permission from the state to do mm-hmm. anything. Well, first of all, the negative side is, first of all, to expose what is wrong. So what we're seeking to do right now is to point out that lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. It's important for us to recognize the evil that let our yes be yes, let our no be no. Everything else is from the evil one. And so to expose the falsehood is important. And the only way we can really understand what's wrong and what's dishonest and what's deceptive and not true is to study the Word of God to know what's true. So they say that those who deal with exposing and finding counterfeits in money first have to thoroughly study the real so that they can immediately recognize the fake. And so just as somebody fighting counterfeiting would have to, first of all, really know every aspect of what is true currency so that they can tell when they're dealing with a fake or counterfeit product, we need to do the same. And if you want the gold standard of truth, you've got to go to the Bible, the Word of God. Book of Proverbs, wisdom, truth. This is vital. The Gospels in particular. Jesus said, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. So that's a start. And I would say, so one of the first things we've got to do is when we recognize we're being lied to, when they can take words like call the murder of babies choice and violent rights protest and perversion and alternative lifestyle and hate speech is politically correct and racism is called diversity and intolerance is called tolerance and violence is called peace and looting of flat screen TVs is a protest and your free speech is a thought crime. Well, when we understand that, then the first thing to do is disconnect from the world's entertainment industry. I'm not going to let Hollywood determine what I think is normal and right. And praise God, there's more and more alternative, excellent people out there. Praise God for the Kendrick brothers and for, in this country, Franz Cronier and those who are producing alternatives. Mel Gibson really did us a great job with producing Apocalypto and The Passion of the Christ and so on. And now there's many others trying to produce alternatives. So don't follow the mainstream. And when you see that something's gotten all kinds of Oscars, just remember, who are the Oscars? The Oscars are a bunch of millionaires handing gold statues to one another. It's the Hollywood producers, scriptwriters, and actors who are mutually back-scratching and back-patting. And this year, I'll give you a gold statue. Next year, you give me a gold statue. It's just a promotional scam to give you the impression that this is something excellent. And what's the things that are normally getting Oscars these days? Well, the ones that are promoting LGBTQ perversion, anti-Christian, this sort of thing. This is cutting edge in promoting new perversions that nobody ever thought of before. This is what Hollywood is often rewarding. They're not going to give something like Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ an Oscar for anything. In fact, they boycotted it and wouldn't even show it in their chains of cinemas, and they tried to destroy his life. So Oscars and so on are not about what's good objectively. And in the Bible, we're told whatever things are good and true and noble and upright and praiseworthy and excellent, think on such things, Philippians 4. So let's try to look for alternatives. And I'd say, aside from disconnecting from SATV, and you would notice that in our home we didn't ever have SATV or any
TV.
Cable. We didn't have TV, right, yes. We chose selected videos, but we never watched TV. And we didn't have the newspaper either. And we had alternatives. We never lacked for books, newsletters, magazines, outside source, but all from alternative sources. So, and home education, of course, is the ultimate declare independence, because through home education, we're getting our curriculum not from the New World Order, globalist, secular, humanist, situation ethics, evolutionary, billions of years ago, from goo to the zoo to you, from mud to monkeys, molecules and man. Once upon a time, there was nothing, and then there was something, and something became everything. Who needs that science fiction for grown-ups, that fairy tale? It's garbage. So by going into home education and supporting alternative entertainment, news media sources, we are already well on our way to independent thinking. And that's why some people may think, but what you're saying sounds so crazy. Well, if you're living in a realm of Hollywood and the Clinton News Network and the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation and Sly Magazine and Newspeak and Useless News and World Report and the Cape Crimes, well, then when a person talks some normal common sense, saying something like, biologically, there's only two genders, or marriage can only be between a man and a woman, it might sound horrible, terrible, bizarre, but that's factual reality. And it's only if one has allowed oneself to be bombarded and indoctrinated by this huge tsunami of, what shall we call it, this BLM. What does BLM stand for? Is it Baal, Lucifer, and Moloch? Is it Burn, Loot, and Murder? Bolshevism, Leninism, Marxism? Something like that. Anyway, so you've got all this tsunami of Antifa, BLM kind of nonsense, which on a normal day, in a normal year, something other than 2020, people had looked at it and said, it's disgusting. This is terrorism. These people are rude. These people are vile. They're threatening the very foundations of civilization. You can't run around destroying monuments and attacking and accosting and intimidating and threatening people in the streets and the restaurants and looting people's shops. That's insane. But now, if you say that, you could be guilty of a thought crime and you could lose your job. And if your wife tweets something about it, you could be kicked off the national football team. Because now we've got big brothers watching you, and your wife makes a comment on social media, and next thing, you've lost your job because of an opinion she had, which is so obvious that any rational person would have said, well, yes, she's just stating the facts. But the only way how anyone can tolerate what's going on in 2020, where you need government permission to breathe fresh air, you've got to wear a mask to go anywhere, and you need permission to do anything, and if you go to church, you can't sing, and the only way that could make sense is if you're listening to the propaganda nonsense all day long and you're accepting this. So disconnect and go for the alternative, and particularly get yourself back into the Bible and find like-minded people who haven't been indoctrinated and brainwashed. And if we are products of state schooling and of the whole entertainment industry and so on, then we need to go through a detox, just like a drug addict needs to go cold turkey and come off their drugs and their addictions. We need to recognize, and all of us have had to do it at some stage, where we realize we've been lied to. And I was brought up in a more sane age, but nevertheless, before I was converted, because I came from a secular family, even though our society was a lot more respecting of life and property, when I was converted, I thought abortion was justifiable. I thought that euthanasia was acceptable. I thought evolution was true. There was a whole lot of things that I had to get deprogrammed from. And through the years, I found more and more, wow, gee, I really got the wrong end of the stick on this one, and I've been deceived about that. And nothing like facts to ruin a good story.
And where can we get more resources about the current situations that we are in, the current rhetorics, and how we can fuel ourselves with not only energy but confidence and knowledge to go against this.
Yes. So, ReformationSA.org. ReformationSA.org is a website. We've got a lot of great resources that have come from the Reformation Society over the last 15 years. Every Thursday night in Cape Town, we've been meeting and discussing different issues in the light of what the Bible teaches, in the light of the great reformations and revivals of the past, and examples of excellence of courageous individuals who've stood up against the tide, who haven't been the dead fish floating downstream, but steel-headed trout swimming upstream, going against the flow, jumping up the waterfalls, that sort of thing. And so the Reformation Society has produced a treasure trove of great articles, videos and audios and PowerPoints that you can access on reformationsa.org. That could be very helpful to start with. A new initiative that started just 2.5 years ago was Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism. So if one goes to the HMS School of Christian Journalism, HMS standing for Henry Morton Stanley, hmsschoolofchristianjournalism.org, you will find quite a few articles on current news issues from different perspectives and some audios and videos that could help get you introduced. On the Frontline Mission essay.org, you'll find quite a number of things we've particularly produced on, like Black Lives Matter is a new religious cult, and issues on resistance to revolution or how to respond to Marxist bullying tactics, things like this. If you go into our Frontline Mission essay.org audio files, you'll find from the Frontline previous audios that we've done. If you haven't been listening to this podcast regularly, you'll see we've tackled a whole range of subjects from entertainment, education, economics, weaponizing words, and a whole lot more. So those are some audio sources that you can go through. And if you're interested in home education, well, we've got a wide range of excellent materials on William Carey Bible Institute website. So it's William Carey, B-I, stands short for Bible Institute, so williamcareybi.com. You'll find a tremendous resource, all free, on 27 subjects, history, all the way through a range of different subjects, and you'll be able to get PDF books, lecture notes, manuals, PowerPoints, audios, videos, and so on, which would help you to provide alternatives to the secular humanist indoctrination that the world's giving us in our local university. So let's get the facts. It's so important that we disconnect from the lies, that we recognize when terminology is being dishonest. I mean, just for example, how can the killing of an innocent baby be pro-choice or removal of the products of conception, or TOP, that's short for termination of pregnancy? See how they use a euphemistic term to make murder sound respectable. That suddenly, instead of it being killing of an innocent baby or infanticide or abortion, it's now TOP, removal of product conception. Let's refuse to use those terms. No more of this load shedding. No more of this speaking about like what the BBBEE compliant. Well, that's the same thing as saying we have racial quotas and we discriminate on the basis of race. Well, that's not respectable. So they've got a nice BBBEE. Well, that's just like TOP. Mm-hmm. And you're not pro-choice when the baby is getting killed. Pro-choice to lie. Babies don't choose to die.
Well, Dad, thank you for that. And if I can end with James 4, verse 6, but he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope this was helpful. God bless.